Afternoon, everybody. Today I wanted to speak to the benefits of soy, or maybe the concerns about soy. I get this question a lot, you know, given that I promote plants and all. And I think I just want to kind of walk through the evidence and why I do recommend that my patients consume 2 to 3 servings of soy products daily. And I wouldn't just limit it to, let's say, just soy milk. It absolutely can be part of that. But for women, especially when we're looking for the isoflavone content that really will promote bone health, breast cancer risk reduction, and especially as we're hitting around that perimenopause, menopausal stage in our lives, that is going to be important for actually seeing the benefits of soy and the reduction of those things. So let me, you know me, I like lists. So first thing, let's just talk a little bit about the benefits of soy, right? So first of all, soy is nutrient rich, right? So soy is a great source of protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals. And it's really particularly be noted that of its great protein content. And when you look at the digestibility and absorption, it's on par with animal protein sources. So it can absolutely promote muscle synthesis, similar to that of animal protein when you look at the data that's available so far. Now, the other thing that I'm always promoting is the one thing that is always changing is, well, it's constant, is change. So via the data that we're seeing so far, this is what I wanted to share with you. Next, let's look at heart health. So when you look at the studies, some suggest that soy products can absolutely lower cholesterol, and that is what I've seen with patients as well, anywhere from 3 to 12%. So I made it part of my cholesterol lowering protocol, which will also be part of my cholesterol glucose mastermind, which I'll go into in depth later. I'll probably be launching that in the next month or so. But yeah, so again, cholesterol issues, taking some more soybeans, edamame, tempeh, tofu, soy milk. So there's just some considerations there, 3 to 12%. Next, you have phytoestrogens, in particular what we call isoflavones. It's a type of phytoestrogen, which can have a very mild estrogen-like effect on the body, but also an anti-estrogen effect. And I'll get to that in a minute. But that can be very beneficial, kind of like I hinted to earlier, in decreasing your menopausal symptoms. It may have protective effects against breast cancer risk, also improving survivability and some other things. We had a great talk about this in context around breast cancer with Christy Funk, who's an amazing physician. I would encourage you to check out that video that I did not too long ago, that was on the podcast. And next, let's talk about bone health, right? So bone health is such an important piece to so many women are worried about bone health, and men should be as well, but it's more pronounced in women, especially during this perimenopausal change timeframe. And having going through this myself, I became more hyper aware and really started looking at how does that actually work. But I'm going to get to why the estrogen cannot, you know, the phytoestrogens or isoflavones can be pro-estrogenic and also anti-estrogenic at the same time, and why that is a benefit to you to consume them. Now, what are the considerations and cautions, right? Of course, we want to be careful about allergies, right? So soy is a common allergen. So if you do have an allergy, you should obviously avoid it. If you have thyroid disease, and like I do, I have been hypothyroid with Hashimoto's since the birth of my second child, who will be 28 next month, Jonathan. My thyroid actually improved when I started eating plant-based. No, I can't say that was in context of just soy, but I do consume soy regularly and have for 12 years. I still take a small dose of levothyroxine. The key here is to understand there's two places that you want to be cautious with taking any food if you're taking levothyroxine. One, food can decrease the absorption of your medication. So you should be taking your Synthroid or levothyroxine in the morning before you eat, and give yourself about an hour gap before you do consume your first meal or drink. So there's that. And then there is some concern also with Potentially, but I haven't seen the evidence of it. I would be still be say you're fine to consume soy products, but you want to make sure that you're not in an iodine deficient state. So, meaning iodine is utilized by the thyroid to make thyroid hormone T4 and T3. T3 is converted from T4 in the periphery. Anyway, I'm also going to be doing a thyroid masterclass later this year. There's so many masterclasses as part of the Healing Kitchen. So if you haven't checked out our Healing Kitchen, check out drmarvis.com, join our email list. I send out lots of free stuff as well. Plus, there's tons of free guides if you don't want to join. I'm just saying that's available. But anyway, so there's some things there. So make sure you're getting at least 150 micrograms of iodine, which often comes in iodized salt. Again, you can get it in other places. I'm not going to go deeper into that right now, but be mindful when you're taking your medication with any food. But if you have thyroid disease and you consume soy, you're going to be okay. Just keeping those two things in mind. And then you also want to look at the quality, right, and the processing. So, there are minimally processed foods like tofu and tempeh and edamame, or the soybean itself. You can get, I think Eden has canned soybeans, which I have in my cupboard. So when you have highly processed soy products like soy protein isolate or soy protein concentrate, I would be more mindful that that actually might be less helpful, because there are some other things that tends to act a little bit more like animal protein. So again, any ultra processed food we want to avoid, regardless of whatever dietary preference you have. We can all agree that processed foods could be as much as cooking your beans, right? That's a processed food. But ultra processed foods, when you look at the ingredients and you need a chemical degree to understand what it even means, and your grandma's like, I don't understand this list of ingredients. Those are the foods we want to avoid, right? So if you have to ask yourself, what is soy protein isolate? Let's not eat it. Let's put it back and go get the edamame from the freezer section. And next, there are some genetic modifications in foods. Most of the GMO foods, like soy, are actually given to animals as feed. So most of the foods that the soy, like the tofu and everything you get for yourself for human consumption, is going to be organic. But you do might want to avoid the GMO products if that is a concern for you. Again, I would be very, very, I guess I would be. It'd be sad to say that you shouldn't consume food just because they are GMO, but again, GMO is a touchy subject. I think there's other ways to consume foods. We should be looking at less, more, or we should be supporting organic farmers. And if you eat animal products, but you're also anti-GMO, you might want to look at what is being fed to the products that you're eating. So just throwing that out there. So, and I don't want to be controversial, but I'm just stating the facts. So how, let's jump back into how soy, right, the phytoestrogens, especially these what we call isoflavones, can act as estrogen, what we call agonist, meaning that when they act in the body, they promote estrogen-like activity, or they can act as anti-agonist, meaning that they actually inhibit or decrease the estrogen activity in the body. Okay, so first of all, I want to clarify that everybody has a different genetic makeup, different hormones, different biochemically. So things are, you can't say 100%, this is always the absolute truth, and this is how it's always going to act in every single person. But in general, this is what we see in humans. Basically, let's talk about acting as estrogen agonists, right? So isoflavones can bind to estrogen receptors, particularly what we call beta type estrogen receptors, activate them, and mimic the effects of estrogen. However, it seems that that activation is much, much lower than what actual estrogen would be. But in addition to that, this agonist action or increasing the estrogen-like behavior, right, can be beneficial in certain body tissues under specific conditions, such as menopause, right? So in postmenopausal women, soy isoflavones can alleviate symptoms of hot flashes and night sweats, partially by compensating the decreased natural estrogen production. However, what I would say to that, as there's different types of isoflavones, and genistein in particular is helpful here, getting 20 to 25, I think it was milligrams, 20 to 25, whatever it's measured, and it's left me at the moment, is where you really want to hit that. And how much I went and did some research on the USDA database, and it seems that the whole soybean, tempeh, edamame, those are the better ones than, let's say, soy milk. It's quite diluted by the time you get to tofu and soy milk. So, but the tempeh, which has a whole soybean, it's a fermented soybean, the whole soybean in a can or cooked bean itself, and the edamame have the greatest effect. And you can get just about that much with 1/2 cup serving of each of those. Okay. If you were to do tofu, apparently when you try to say tofu and soy, it comes out as toy. There you go. Toy tofu. So with that in mind, tofu, you probably would need about a 200 gram serving. So keep that in mind there. Okay. Now also with bone health, right? So the isoflavones may help bone density by mimicking the estrogen's role in bone metabolism, and that can reduce your risk of osteoporosis. So all the more reason to having our kiddos consume soy products, right? Because there's so many benefits. In addition, it's great for protein, which is also important for bone health, and on and on. Now, how do how do the isoflavones act as estrogen antagonists, right? So conversely, soy-fed estrogens can block the actions of the body's own estrogen by competing, right, for the same receptor sites, particularly what we call alpha type, right? So the estrogen alpha type, now which can lead to estrogen antagonist effects. And this, for example, would be in breast tissue. So in breast tissue, isoflavones block the estrogen receptors, reducing the what we call proliferative effect of estrogen on breast cells, right? The advancement of growth of breast cells, and which may lower the risk of estrogen-dependent types of breast cancer. I hope that makes sense. And then hormone balance, right? So by binding to estrogen receptors without triggering a strong estrogenic response, isoflavones can help modulate hormone levels and potentially protecting against hormone-related disorders. Okay, so remember, this is context-dependent. I know there's a lot of things in our life that once we identify with a particular dogma or particular belief, we take it as our own, as our identity. And I'll certainly see that, and even in the plant-based world, really interesting to see politics within people just saying, eat more plants. I don't know why anyone would argue with that. And then they feel like their particular way of eating plants is better than someone else's when 99% of what they're saying is equivalent. So just take this. It's all context dependent as well, effects and everything. There is no absolute right now, at least with the scientific evidence we have, that this much or that much and this person and across the board is always sufficient. All I do know is that a plant-based dietitians who consume a plant-based diet have seen health benefits. Not one saw a decrease. I'll throw that out there. Again, that is context in my experience, and I've been taking care of patients for 12 years. Take it for what it's worth. A lot of N of one cases, okay? So let's take this into here. The context-dependent effects, right? So remember, the agonist or antagonist action of soy phytoestrogens can be influenced by, one, the concentration of the isoflavones, which is why I was saying go to the whole soybean, the edamame, or the tempeh, right? The type of estrogen receptor present, are we looking at alpha or beta receptors? The level of endogenous estrogen, or the amount of estrogen that you make, as in my case, it has decreased since I went through some menopausal things, which has been interesting. Maybe I'll share that at some point. In May, I am doing a menopause workshop as part of the Healing Kitchen. And I'll be sharing, I'm sure, a lot of my own stories because they're quite comical. Anyway, and just your individual biological factors, your genetic factors. For example, my mother and my grandmother suffered terribly through menopause, but they also ate very differently than I did. They both also had breast cancer, but I'm still consuming soy products. Because I see the benefit, I'm living a different life, and hopefully we'll have different outcomes. But again, life is life. I can only control what I can control, which are my thoughts, what I eat, my beliefs, things like that. So anyway, there are also effects, you know, very immense individuals really by age, sex, hormonal status, genetic predisposition, And I must throw out there that when you look at the context of men consuming soy, let me pull up my other notes on that in particular, because I know that is also a question I get. It's like something called like soy boy or something. You're not going to become a soy boy. You're not going to get breasts by eating soy. Remember these, this is context dependent. Now, if you were eating a buttload of these, like way more than would be consumed in a normal human's daily consumption, maybe you might have a problem. But that's with anything. You can drink too much water, lower your sodium content in your blood, and die. So the amount is a poison, but that again, like I said, is everything. And we require water fluids to live. So just throwing that out there, guys. I did have, when you think about in the perspective, you know, when you look at extensive clinical trial data, this shows no effect on soy of isoflavones on testosterone or estrogen levels in men, even when exposure was really markedly exceeded what we call a typical Japanese intake. But again, based on the current research that we have, I think you'd have to take in so much more than would be considered normal. So I do find it rather entertaining, some of the comments people will make about things, including physicians, including myself. I'm sure in 10 years I'll be like, how could I see that? Why didn't I see that? The science has changed and I will have to change my stance. And that's okay. People may be angry because I changed my stance, but that's okay too. Again, it is what it is. We're human and we're living within the context of limited data, and our scientific rigor is only good as the quality of the study, the type of the study, the actual interpretation of the study. But when you look at it all together, at the end of the day, from my opinion, soy is a wonderful product to consume in your diet, to 2 to 3 servings a day, primarily focused with tofu, soy milk, I'd say are my second tier, but the soybean, edamame, and tempeh would be my first tier. Okay, I hope you found that helpful. Yeah, okay, guys. And I hope that is everything that you had any questions about regarding soy. And again, as always, I want to say, check out drmarbus.com. I have a longevity lovers workshop coming up as part of the Healing Kitchen. That's going to be on the 30th. And it's free for Healing Kitchen members, or you can just see the workshop if you like. Outside, I always provide an ebook with in-depth information. And I hope you will check it out. But as always, I want to say thank you for being here today and for your time. I'm always sending back to you peace, joy, love, abundance, and healing. Like I always say, we need more of that in this world. So may it be your blessing today, because it was my blessing to have you here. So thanks, everyone. I appreciate you being here as always. Have a great rest of your day.